presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in. Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Today, gang, I'm going to talk about high flying, really high flying, the kind of thing they call the upper strata. Those of us interested in aviation know that steadily planes have been going higher and higher, all the way upstairs. In a general way, we know that up high you can fly more safely, more comfortably, and more efficiently. All this, of course, with the right equipment. In the past 10 years, a great deal of progress has been made in developing that equipment for the flying industry. Planes now travel comfortably at altitudes the old-timers never dreamed of. Just recently, leaders in aviation held a high-altitude conference. Top scientists, executives, and pilots all attended. The aim of the conference was to examine every problem of high-altitude flight, every advantage, every limitation, and to get together and examine all information available. The entire industry, military and commercial, is deeply interested in flying at high altitudes. And this meeting was to get the entire industry cooperating, just as they had done on other problems during the war. The chief engineer of Boeing, Edward Wells, said, "It is important to our country that we accumulate accurate new knowledge concerning high-altitude flying so that every advantage may be realized. We would like to contribute what we have and want you to do the same so that industry, government, science, and the public may benefit by proven technical advances." Well, that's a pretty fine way for those in aviation to work together. Later, I'll tell you more about high flying, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. Realizing that Dixie Davenport was playing right into Tex Regan's hands in her attempt to recover her horse, Sequoia, Hop and Tank tried to stop her from paying a $50,000 ransom, but were captured by Tex and his accomplice, Joe Bell. Finally, they managed to escape and returned to Barstow to pick up the search for Dixie when they met Ivan Ivanov. Now, as we join Hop and Tank, they are in the director's limousine heading for the Barstow airfield.
Mr. Ivanov, tell me, did you see the plane from which the note was dropped?
No, I see nothing. I concentrate on the picture.
Well, you heard it, didn't you?
Mr. Tinker, when Ivanov concentrates, his mind is blank.
I'll bet. Well, somebody must have seen it.
I saw it, Mr. Harrigan.
Then, Mr. Peabody, why you not speak up?
I didn't want to disturb you,
sir. All right. What kind of a ship was it?
It was Miss Davenport's plane.
Thought so. Mr. Ivanov, are you sure this is her handwriting?
Positive. I know her handwriting anywhere.
Then I must be legit. Might as well give up.
But why? Why would she suddenly decide to go away? Doesn't sound like Dixie to run out on the picture.
She has never done such a thing. I can remember sometimes she would come on the set, speak like pussycat. But she would work.
Okay, so this is different.
Tank, I don't think Dixie wrote this note.
Are you nuts? You heard what Mr. Ivanov said?
Positively, it is her handwriting.
But that isn't what I meant. I think she was forced to write it.
No, absolutely no.
Why not?
Nobody forces Dixie, darling, to do nothing she does not wish. I should know. Oh, what a temper.
Well, what if Regan threatened to harm Sequoia?
But that is table of different color. For the horse, she'll do anything.
Okay, so she was forced to ride it. Where does that leave us?
Well, let me add up the facts. She left the bank late this morning, obviously, to meet Regan and give him that letter.
What letter?
Well, she deposited $50,000 in the Barstow bank, which could be withdrawn by anyone presenting a certain letter signed by her and the bank president.
And as soon as Regan showed her that Sequoia was all right, she was going to give him the letter. At least, that's the way we figured it.
So don't keep me in suspenders. What happened?
I wish I knew.
Look, maybe Regan didn't meet her at all. He was busy taking care of Hutz, remember?
That didn't take him long.
You think maybe Regan was already at the bank?
Who would have delivered the note then?
Joe Bell.
And who would have stayed with Dixie to keep her from calling the police?
Well, they could have tied her up, couldn't they? Or skip it.
I know what you mean, Tank. I'm afraid we can't overlook the possibility.
Then, if I may ask, why all this chitter-chatter? Why are you not doing something about it?
What, for instance?
Well, Mr. Ivanov, you check with the bank. Find out if the money was withdrawn today.
So, yes?
What do we do?
What did Dixie tell me about Regan? Oh, yes, he owned a ranch. And didn't you hire him because he told you he could get hold of a herd of wild horses, Mr. Ivanov?
Correct.
Did he get them for you?
No. He said he had to use Sequoia. But Yixe Darling would not permit us.
Hey, this sounds interesting.
Go on, sir.
That is all. Mr. Egan did not get Sequoia. I did not get the wild horses.
Maybe now he's got Sequoia, he might still go after the herd. Could be. Did he tell you where the herd was, Mr. Ivanov?
A valley in the mountains. I do not bother with pretty details.
Mr. Peabody, would you know?
No, not the exact location. They were in a large valley, not too far away from the camp.
You don't know exactly where?
But he said his ranch house was in the same valley, Mr. Tinker.
Oh, boy.
Mr. Harrigan, you think you can find your place?
You can bet I'll make a darn good try, sir.
We're at the airfield, Mr. Harrigan.
Oh, pull up at the last hangar, please.
Very well.
But tell me, Mr. Harrigan, what good is it finding wild horses?
It'll be a lot easier spotting a herd of wild horses than a ranch house.
And besides, if Regan is after the horses,
we might pick up his trail.
But who wants Mr. Regan? We are trying to find my Gixxer Darling.
Find Regan, and we'll probably find her, Mr. Ivanov.
Here you are, Mr. Harrigan.
Thanks. Go on, Tank. Now, you won't forget to call the president of the bank, will you, sir?
Of course not. Ivanov never forgets. If Ivanov forgets, Mr. Peabody remembers.
Okay, let's go, Tank.
Mr. Harrigan!
Oh, Lord. Yes, Mr. Ivanov.
If you see Mr. Regan, attack!
Attack? He thinks we're still fighting a war.
Act quickly! Remember, he who hesitates boils the broth.
At the director's final admonition, Hoff and Tank suppress a smile and then turn and stride toward the hangar in their fast little beach craft. They have a chance to find Dixie. A slim one, but it's still a chance. They intend to make the most of it. Meanwhile, some 70 miles to the south, in a sprawling ranch house at the north end of one of the valleys of the San Bernardino Mountains, Tex Regan and Joe Bell are listening to Dixie Davenport's furious protestations.
I played square with you, Tex. I'm willing to give you $50,000. Why don't you let me go?
Might be a little embarrassing for me, Miss Davenport.
How?
If I let you go now, what's to keep you from phoning the police to nab me when I go to the bank in the morning?
I promise you I won't.
I'm just insuring that, ma'am.
Joe, won't you help me? Please, Joe.
I guess Joe's kind of bashful.
Well, you're not really working with Tex, are you, Joe? You said you'd try to help me.
Go on, partner. Tell her.
Joe!
Appears like he ain't very talkative.
Tex, when are you going to let me go?
I'll have to think about that, ma'am.
Well, you can't keep me here forever, you know. Ivanov will move heaven and earth to find me.
After the note that Joe dropped on the camp.
Oh.
That's a little extra insurance, ma'am. Always comes in handy.
Tex, please tell me what you're going to do.
Well, first thing in the morning, I'm going into Barstow.
Then you'll come back and give me Sequoia and let me go, won't you?
That depends on how I feel in the morning, ma'am.
But Tex...
Listen, Miss Davenport. You're the only one who can prove I stole Sequoia. You're the only one who can prove I kept you here. So you just sit there a minute and figure things out and see if you get the same answer I do.
His coarse, unshaven face set in deadly, rigid lines, Tex Regan stares at the beautiful young movie star, and after a few seconds, she falters and buries her face in her hands. Regan's meaning is very clear. We'll bring you the climax of today's episode in just a moment, gang, so stand by. Now let's go upstairs with the high-altitude experts and see what they have to say about high flying. As you know, tests are going on all the time because flying high has definite performance gains. With turbo superchargers, you get increases in speed when you get into the thin air of the stratosphere. And when you use gas turbine power, either propellers or jets, you get increases in range. Of course, when you start flying high, you have to have your power plant designed for that purpose. You also have problems in fuel and oil systems. Right now, the experts feel that better propellers are needed to fly above 40,000 feet. The test pilots also found they were running into trouble with their electrical and radio equipment when they went up above 40,000 feet. Incidentally, it's interesting to know that you can't duplicate the conditions at 40,000 feet in a laboratory. That's why the big companies have flying laboratories. The low temperatures, low pressures, and low humidity all affected the radio equipment. All this is being investigated and worked on at this very moment. You've all heard of the Boeing Stratocruiser and the other high-altitude planes with pressurized cabins, which enable passengers to fly comfortably at high altitudes. Well, what you may not know is that just as the human body is affected by high altitudes, just so is the body of a plane. Things begin to happen to the metal construction. The entire structure goes under new and unusual stresses. All these things are known and being investigated. Some problems have been worked out. Others still are to be solved. There's still new frontiers to be crossed in aviation, gang, and it's a young industry with room for youth. So get ready to take your place in the sky. For always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. The sun is a golden red ball as it sinks lower and lower in the west, and its rays illuminate the fuselage and wings of a streamlined biplane, soaring and swooping in and out of the many valleys and canyons of the San Bernardino Mountains of California. In the cabin, Huff and Tank peer earthward, searching for a glimpse of a herd of wild horses. Finally, Tank settles back in his seat and rubs his eyes.
It's no use, Hop. We better quit. Getting awful dark down there.
Now, let's just check this valley here.
My eyes are almost dropping out of my head.
Another couple of minutes, that's all. Here we go.
Hey, watch it. You're cutting it awful close.
We have to see. Go on, check your side of the valley.
I am.
Hey, isn't that a ranch house back in that heavy clump of trees?
So what? We've seen ranches in almost every valley.
Regan's place has got to be around here. Peabody said it wasn't far from the camp. Spot those wild horses.
Hey, Hop, pull up. You're heading for the slope.
All right, Scott. Oh, thanks, fella.
Now, look, we're going to stop this funny business right now. It's getting too dark to see anything, and we're just sticking our necks in a noose.
Hey, all right, Tank.
Where are you heading?
Back to camp. Is that what you want? I'll cut across the valley again.
Okay. But no going down and poking around.
No, I promise. Tank, do you realize we only have a few hours left to find Dixie? A
few hours? We ain't got nothing left, pal.
I mean tomorrow morning. The sun comes up around 5:30, so we'll have to be up and airborne at 5:15.
Oh, my gosh.
Which gives us less than 4 hours.
Four? How do you figure that?
The bank opens at 9, doesn't it? If Regan gets his money, I'm afraid we'll never see Dixie again.
And even as Hop voices his grim prophecy, 3,000 feet below them, in the doorway of the ranch house Hop and Tank just saw, Tex Regan looks up, then turns to Joe Bell.
You're right, Joe. It is Harrigan's plane. He and that fat partner of his must have broke out of the shack before the floodwaters hit it. But don't you worry about a thing, Joe. See how he's holding course? He ain't spotted us. He'll never spot us. And by tomorrow noon, we'll be 50 grand richer and 500 miles away.
Looking up at the sky again, Tex smiles as he sees the beach slowly receding in the gathering darkness. The boys were so close, and yet so far away. Gang, there are action and suspense in our next gripping episode, so don't fail to listen. Tune in and fly with Pop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.